speech. Because mm-hmm. the converse argument is those who don't have money still have free speech. Because mm-hmm. the converse argument is those who don't have money still have free speech. So why is their speech worth more than ours? You know, speech shouldn't be based on, you know, but no one's going to make that argument. And I don't know how you do. It's like a class action suit, you know, the whole entire country versus that. Like, I don't know what you would be able to do. But I do think that, like, we could defeat Alito. And I think one more defeat, and then they'd have to come back with a moderate, kind of in the role, in the mold of Sandra Day. And just on one level,
Couldn't he still do a recess appointment or something?
I don't think to the Supreme Court, and if so, it's only for a year. It's only until the next Congress convenes.
I just feel like they've got so many ways of doing, like, little sleights of hand right. and, you know, sleights of Robert's Rules of Order to be able to get people right. into where they want them. It's like, I mean, it's beyond me how they can do all that they can do. But I feel like, I feel impotent. I mean, I feel like, you know, attempts, I mean, I know it's terrible. It's a terrible place to be, and I don't sure. want to admit that, you know, there's nothing we can do. But I feel like, you know, protests even don't really do anything at this point.
I hear you.
You know? I mean,
I hear you.
Hey, those people are still honking their horns every Friday night. Let's get out of Iraq.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's still and it still increases energy and gets people thinking, gets people talking. Cindy Sheehan has done more for this movement than anybody that I can see, and that's fucking great. I'm so happy about that. But I guess personally, I just
if she felt impotent, we wouldn't really have had that.
Exactly.
On one other level too, it's worth noting that they passed some sort of law down in Texas, down in what's that stupid town that he goes to?
The
Crawford. Mm-hmm. That they couldn't camp along the sides of the roads. Like they people were arrested, blah blah blah. It didn't of course Ellsberg or something got arrested. It's like, you know, poster child for the guy in the last big war like whatever. But it should be noted that a Texan from Crawford somewhere along the route to Bush's ranch allowed them to camp on his property.
Yeah, he's totally into it.
I mean, if that's not an indicator, mm-hmm. deep in the heart of red state America, I mean, Texas would like to be its own country. They're so, you know what I mean? Like, they're like red state wanting to be
there. Hey, cell phones don't even work in Texas. So.
But someone in Texas was like, you know, it's kind
of
like...
someone very close to where Bush lives, which probably means that he's got a little bit of...
He's
got to
have some sort of green.
Scratch. Yeah.
So... Anyway, it comes back to the original answer. What do you do? And it comes back to what Katrina says. Like, there's always, every time I'm frustrated, I hope, even if it's a daydream's worth of hope. You know, I dream, I figured out why I think that it's unconstitutional to say that money equals speech. Like, I don't know if it could ever be proved in court, but at least I have that hope.
How does the story about hope go? That was all that was left in Pandora's box. After she released all the evils into the world, all that was left when they shut the box was hope.
Yeah. Right.
And so we're always stuck with hope.
Right.
We've always got it there, even in the midst of despair.
Sure. Yeah.
But we have to open the box, and then it'll escape.
Or as Kate Bush said, leave it open. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, what's the most frustrating thing for you right now? As an intellectual, as an aware person... As an activist, even if it's through the internet broadcast.
To me, the most frustrating thing is the lack of critical judgment in the world around us. The fact that everybody thinks everything is equal all the time. Mm-hmm. That each thing equals something else, and that there's no critical judgment. That continually frustrates me because I think that there are levels to the world that we are. We're so smashed with media and with all the inputs just coming at us all the time that we are losing our ability to see whether something is real and something is good versus right. something that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's my major frustration.
That's very good.
It's a life frustration too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What would you attribute the largest contributing factor to that?
Well, haven't actually been thinking about that.
Would it be a consolidation of media outlets, or would it be ignorance in general?
I don't think it's the media outlets in general doing it, but I do think that it's an ignorance. I do think it's a form of ignorance in our society, where we have lost perspective. I mean, I still, no matter how much I hate the Bush administration, I still want to respect the president.
Right.
You know, I want to respect the office, but I can't. And so I'm having a harder and harder time dealing with that critically.
Right.
You know, because I still think that there are some you know, this is still a great country.
I know. I agree. And there's still, not only that, I mean, it's really difficult to think that there even may be pretty decent people in that administration that are, because of the global use of the administration to such dishonest purposes, they're, you know, squelched from trying to make the changes that they wanted to make in the world.
Exactly.
And they're Republicans or just very conservative or whatever. And they're just kind of caught up in this groundswell of just lies and just inconsistencies
power.
And power and all that. And it's, you know, I think about those people and I feel really bad for them. I mean, it's just frustrating.
Life is all these shades of gray.
Yes.
And people want to see things in really polarized terms,
right.
real simple terms. Mm-hmm. And it's just simply not true. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. It is possible to be, pro-choice mm-hmm. when it comes to abortion and still be against Roe v. Wade. Still think that
oh
that
yeah.
was decided
well, someone
incorrectly.
Someone just came out and said
that. On the base
that.
Of law?
Yeah.
On the base of how the law is applied?
Yeah,
yeah there was some. Yeah. There was.
I was tempted by that argument,
that.
Too, but I can't buy it.
But I could see how someone would feel that way.
It was
exactly.
Of course.
And there are plenty of good Republicans. You know, there are good
My
people.
My dad's
that are
one of them.
You know, but damn it, the Republican Party has Nazified, jackbooted themselves into
right.
a place that I can't support. But the Democrats are just as bad too.
Oh, exactly.
And,
exactly.
And, you know, I've been very grateful to have Air America in this world because I'm so sick of all the right wing crap that's been shoved down my ears for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I also get sick of the Janine Garofalo, whose continual talk whenever she's on the air is how there's some kind of genetic difference between Republicans and Democrats and how they're just simply not human. There's something wrong with them. There's some subhuman level that's incorrect. They don't know how to think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, bullshit. That's nonsense. And it just feeds.
It may not be complete bullshit.
Well,
there actually
getting back to Katrina's original thing, you have to define Republican. I mean, you know, when you think about those who follow along, the one that Janine Garofalo is talking about, they are stupefying to me. I don't get how in the world you can consider yourself a fiscal conservative or don't tread on me conservative and still blindly follow this guy just because Democrats are worse.
Right.
Just because you can't vote for John Kerry. Like,
following
it blows my
anybody
mind.
Like a sheep is just irresponsible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Let me throw you some frustration out, though, that's actually fun to hear about.
All right.
Every Republican I know at work is fucking pissed off at the special election results in California.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely apeshit pissed off.
Yeah.
Like they want to leave the country mad. I'm
wow.
like, are you kidding me? Like, I've wanted to leave this country about four times now,
yep,
like starting in 94 and
Take
going straight through.
Take a taste of it.
Yeah, but they got Tukey Williams coming up.
Yeah.
When Tukey gets put to death, as I presume Schwarzenegger will.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Oh,
Schwartzy has
yeah.
to have some kind of power after he gets
No, they just have to figure out how they're going to use it.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's what I think is taking so long, is they're trying to figure out how they're going to parlay this into some really positive media event for Schwarzenegger and maybe tie it on to his next Bond issue.
He may actually...
Serious,
the Tukey
man.
Williams Amendment.
Serious. that's what they'll call it.
Good thing.
And they'll float like a $3 billion bond measure.
He could do an address to the state from mansion
jail.
Or from yeah, exactly. No, from wherever, you know, like up in Sacramento where he says, this is really tough for me, but I had to come down on this side for this reason. And
right.
that would be magical for him politically.
Right.
Well,
right.
But let's talk about Tukey for just a moment. Now, I presume you're anti-death penalty?
Yeah, I'm anti-death
yeah.
penalty.
Yeah.
Me too. I'm anti-death penalty, but I certainly can understand the people who are pro-death penalty. I understand where they're coming from.
I'm also anti-parole.
Okay, that's good,
too. I'm anti-both.
That's a good point. I've never actually thought about the parole
thing. I'm anti-death penalty, I'm anti-parole, and I'm for if you spend $1 on prisons, you should spend $3 on avoiding, like trying to save a child before he gets
something.
To 8.
Oh, okay.
No, I think that it's been proven that it's very difficult. There are so many people that you can rehab, and there are so many people
well,
you can't.
Well, Tukey Williams is a perfect example. I mean, he's totally come around
180 yeah, he totally
degrees
has,
and
totally.
Is doing amazing
though,
things.
Though he's not admitting the crime, right? He says
no, no, no.
He
denies the crime.
He denies the crime.
Yeah, he denies
that
the crime.
That doesn't help.
Right.
And the fact is there are an awful lot of teenagers, a lot of high school kids today, who regard him as a hero.
Right.
And I don't like that either.
Right, right.
You know, yes, he's now peace-oriented and he's written
children's
books.
Well, he's not going to walk free.
Of course not.
He's going to get commuted to life in prison.
If that happens, yeah.
Right. Well, it will. There's no way he can get killed at this point.
There's that lack of critical judgment again there. The kids today regard him as a hero, and so this is just going to be an offense against them because their hero is executed.
Well, it's better him than Robotron the Destroyer, you know? I mean, right? I mean, you were talking about Gray, right?
Yeah.
Well, at least in my limited readings, it does appear that Tukey committed the crime that he's in prison for.
Right.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I can't say because I don't know what the evidence is, and I know that when gang crimes happen, it's usually a gang crime. It might not be just one person who is involved. I'm not going to say I know what happened with his crime and that whether he is actually guilty of this particular crime or not. Maybe there isn't something. I mean, there is something we don't know, but
very possible.
But point being, I mean, he was doing a lot of bad shit, and for that reason, he probably should have been in some kind of incarceration in some way, anyway. But he is doing some really great things now. Mm-hmm. I mean, thank goodness for that. You know what I mean? He's really, you know, helping some people out from his experiences and in a way that nobody else can help them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, who better than he began the Crips?
Who could speak
is that
to,
right?
Who could
well,
speak to gang?
That's,
who better
that's a myth.
Than him? Oh, it's a myth?
I mean, the Crips started around the 30s. He certainly wasn't around.
Oh, really?
So this nonsense that he created the Crips, maybe he named it, maybe there's something like that.
Maybe he started the LA chapter.
Yeah. I mean, what gang in the 30s had a cool name like the Crips? You know, it was probably
those
nefarious journeymen or something like that.
Exactly. And he came along and started it. Well, I say go for it, man. Keep on working.
I mean, the Tukey thing is primarily just another example of a black man getting railroaded. I think he, from the evidence that I've read, and it could be very incomplete, he probably did commit the crime. Mm-hmm. But what we have, and the real reason I bring this up, are those assholes like John and Ken who are taking an hour, the Burn Tukey hour, every day, where they basically are race baiting and getting people all upset about this. In order to get good ratings,
that's advertising dollars
and all that.
They wouldn't even think about that. Yeah, they wouldn't even think about it if it weren't advertising dollars. Which is why I say it's so hard to combat dishonesty with honesty. And that's a perfect example. It's like you don't even know what you're fighting against when you're fighting those kind of people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? Because they don't even know what they're saying. They're just saying what's scripted or what they're told to say, and it's because of advertising dollars. It has nothing to do with what they really feel. I mean, there's no integrity in it. So how do you fight that? They don't give a shit. Nailing them.
How do you
them?
Deal with the frustration that exists?
You meditate.
Yeah. I think that's a good choice.
Which is why that was my point in the beginning. You got to meditate.
Or a lot of
well,
times
to meditate is to detach from it and to actually...
Detach momentarily, it's but it's also to integrate. Mm-hmm. It's to integrate, to understand what all of the aspects of the world are and all of the aspects of life are, and to be able to integrate it into something that can be a comfortable living situation for you while you're here on this material world,
well,
which isn't going to be
and
forever.
Accepting are similar, I think.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I'm saying putting it together, you know, assimilating is more, you know, closer to, I think, what you're trying to get at. But for everyone, it's different, and I'm not going to say what I do is what everyone does, but that's my idea.
Well,
I'm smiling right now.
I want to take a few minutes here. This is Kill Radio and Critical Mass Radio Network.
Hello.
For what is the date? The 26th. November 2005. This is what the 15th Critical Mass Radio Network.
Yeah.
Wow.
All these streams make a mighty river, folks. And I hope that there's some listeners. Hey, let's check.
And we're swimming hard.
Let's check the listeners here.
Oh, my God. There's been like a ton
happening.
Of IMs that came
See,
in.
Nobody on Critical Mass and nobody anywhere. No,
wait, you didn't refresh it, did you?
Don't need to.
Oh, yeah?
No.
Oh, okay.
I just brought it up.
Call me wrong.
No, numbers are small. Well,
Swanee.
Everyone's eating.
But I know we're being listened to in France.
That rocks. We love you, Dave.
What I want to do is play. John Hirschfeld dropped off a bit of an interview About the thing that's called the Armenian Genocide, which happened about 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. The one day of the year that Zanku Chicken is closed.
Ta-da.
Is that.
Zanku Chicken history.
So this is a 30-minute interview. We're not going to play 30 minutes, maybe. I just want to let John discuss with his expert here for a few minutes. And let's hear what he's brought up in for us.
Sounds goodly.
Today. So we'll be back.
When is John's show on Kill Radio?
He's on from Thursday. 10 until noon. Yeah. 10 until noon on Thursday morning, just before Craptabulous, and then he does the 6 o'clock news.
So that's John Hirschfield, folks.
Yes, here's John.
Hello, everybody on the internet, and you are in for a major treat. I have editor of the Armenian Weekly, Jenny Kildian, calling me all the way from the East Coast. Where are you calling from? From Boston,
Watertown,
right?
Massachusetts.
Watertown, Massachusetts. Thank you so much for calling. It's such an honor to speak.
Thank you for having us. I really appreciate it.
So, as I understand it, I mean, this issue is an ongoing issue, of course. We always hear discussions about the Armenian Genocide and when is the United States going to officially recognize it, recognize the at least the terminology of the genocide.
Yes.
And there's always pressure from the Turkish side not to do so. But just recently something happened. I was reading an article about in Germany, they were able to remove references to the genocide?
They were, and then they were able to put them back.
I see. And now there's a lawsuit going on in where you are, in Massachusetts, right?
Yes. On October 26th, a lawsuit was filed against the state of Massachusetts that would force the Board of Education to include materials in the state's curriculum that what they call contra-genocide, that contest the historical accuracy of the Armenian Genocide. And what they're alleging is that the Board of Education removed them based on political pressure, and they violated the First Amendment rights of teachers and students, and also of an organization called the Assembly of Turkish American Associations, that they're also cited as plaintiffs in the case.
So I'm sure I'm not the first to think of this, but isn't this sort of like saying there should be something in our textbooks denying the Jewish Holocaust of World War II, to be fair to the free speech of the Nazi movement?
What's interesting is that the plaintiffs, two of whom are teachers, one of whom are a student, aside from that ATAA organization, they say that they accept that Holocaust denial could be taught in school in order to protect the free speech of those people who would deny that the Holocaust ever happened.
But they say
that they don't believe those denials to be credible, yet they believe the denials of the Armenian Genocide to be credible.
Mm.
And so the teacher, Bill Schechter is his name, and Larry Aronson was the other teacher, they continue to teach both sides, as they call it, of the Armenian Genocide. They teach the Armenian Genocide perspective. They also teach the Turkish denial as being credible, even though that side was taken out of the curriculum guide. And Ted Griswold is a student. He said that he would want for students to be able to decide which side is true and which side is not. And he said that classmates of his that were taught both sides, some of them ended up thinking that it's just a controversy, kind of shrugged their shoulders and just moved on. But he said majority of them believed that it was a genocide.
Mm.
I, as a journalist, I don't know whether I find this to be academically sound way of teaching students history, but the plaintiffs seem to think that it's valid.
Now, do you find yourself in sort of a difficult position? Are you able to look at this issue as a strict journalist or as an Armenian and editor of the Armenian Weekly? Is it difficult for you to sort of not be clouded with emotion? I mean, I'm trying to think of how I would react to, a similar situation where someone was trying to say, my denial of the Holocaust is more credible than yours.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult to write about someone denying the genocide and not call it genocide denial in a headline or in the text.
Right.
to send it to someone and then imagine that they're looking at it and saying, oh, this person is just another biased Armenian. The father of the student, I spoke to him, and he said, you know, I think my kid could be doing something much better with his time, and ended the interview by apologizing to me. And I told him, you know, you don't have to apologize to me. I'm just a journalist. I'm doing my job. You know, I'm asking the questions. And, you know, since you and your son and his teachers want free speech, I'm just trying to give you guys the opportunity to express what you think is your side. But it's very difficult to try to report on it and have a belief system to have grown up, you know, hearing the stories of your grandparents that survived or the stories of people that didn't survive, and, you know, to know that someone is telling you that I'm really sorry, your grandparent, or, you know, this lady who was telling me her story and her family was killed and her father was beheaded, you know, I'm really sorry, but I believe that the Turkish side is credible and the Turkish government is not culpable. Or, you know, the historians that say that the Turkish government had no role or a very minimal role in the genocide, and, you know, that the Armenians also killed other Turks, that makes their side credible and it's not a genocide. It's very difficult to get through stories such as this.
Aside from the obvious political relationship between the United States and the Republic of Turkey, what do you think, what is it that makes this issue some reason impervious from logic and reality? I mean, it seems to be an issue that never goes away. It seems to be the one, you know, huge mass murder that, you know, regular educated people are willing to go, well, I don't know, maybe. You know, it seems to take place in a much different part of the hearts and minds of Americans than other genocides. What is it that makes the Armenian genocide different? Do you think it's the Armenians themselves, their race, or do you think it's just because it was a little bit, you know, longer ago?
It could be because it was longer ago. Maybe it has left what is the forefront of people's vernacular or what they're used to seeing. In its time, during 1915 to 1918, it was widely reported, and, you know, children would sit down and eat dinner, and their parents would tell them to eat all their food because, you know, they should remember the starving Armenians. And the Near East Relief Organization was started because of the Armenian genocide. And even the Harvard newspaper, this is something I came across while I was doing research here, the Harvard University newspaper reported heavily on the Armenian genocide. And the irony is that their newspaper recently put out an article on this lawsuit, which was entirely one-sided, just talking only to the plaintiffs and to the sources that agreed with including the contra-genocide information in the curriculum. And it's just strange to see how different people's perspective is from then until now, and why it's become so easy to just shrug your shoulders and move on and say, okay, two groups are arguing about it, we'll just leave them to argue and not believe that it's a genocide. When I explained it to my classmates when I was in high school, they were surprised to learn that something like this was not included in their history books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that kind of lack of education, that kind of ignorance that leaves Armenians to be incredulous about the denial, and it leaves doors open for people to come in and say the Turkish perspective or the side supported by the Turkish government is credible.
Yeah, yeah. What? How do you win this battle? Is there a victory to be met here? What do you get? Let's say in the end you're able to have an official acknowledgement that indeed this happened. What is it that you hope will change?
Wow. That's something that's 90 years in the making.
Yeah.
That a government has denied that they committed the first atrocity of the 20th century against a group of people and tried to exterminate them from what was their indigenous land.
maybe it wouldn't be so hard for them, because it's not like it's even the same technical government.
And a lot of people today will come out in support of having the Turkish government and the Turkish people go through some a sociological change of sorts to be able to acknowledge as a people that their forefathers, their ancestors, committed something like this. And I think that might be a first step, is to change their mentality in order to understand why Armenians have felt victimized for 90 years, why they still fight this battle in the diaspora, why they want people to be educated about it. Because if we leave it up to people like Bill Schechter and Larry Aronson and Ted Griswold to say that historians should be debating this,
mm-hmm.
where there's no longer a debate, and historians pretty much hands down have accepted that it was a genocide, and, you know, International Association of Genocide Scholars, every time a newspaper will refer to the genocide as alleged or say that Armenians say, these people are steadfast in their cause, and they'll write letters to the editor saying that it's irresponsible of journalists to report this way when it indeed is a genocide. So for students and teachers to say that it's up to the students to decide what is historical fact and what is historical fiction, I think that's just putting off the inevitable for yet another generation.
Up the information on the genocide, and to get more information you can find it on the internet. There are many books that have been written. That was John Hirschfield. This briefly is from a police brutality political meeting street meeting from October 22nd.
Stop police brutality, the repression and criminalization of a generation. Stop it in its tracks. You hear what a powerful voice speaking on behalf of young people all over the world, speaking on behalf of families who have lost their loved ones to police brutality, to world brutality. And you're standing up and you're saying, we're not going to take it anymore. I was introduced as who I am, and that is, I am a spiritual man, and I am one who calls forth honoring our ancestors, those shoulders upon whom we stand. I'm here having my ancestors paid for the right for me to be here and for you to be here, fighting for the truth, fighting for justice, fighting for righteousness and order and balance through all of the wars of this nation, in all of the forms of the service. But they have not fought for these unjust wars. I know many of you have brothers and sisters and family members who are in this unjust war in Iraq, and you cringe at the idea of a telephone call that comes to you that says your loved one has been killed unjustly by this Bush regime. Drive out the Bush regime. The world can't wait. But there is another war. Even though we spend a lot of attention looking at Iraq and the possibility of Iran, there's another war. And that war, you're not being asked to join to fight. War is being waged upon you. Young men, black, brown, and white, war is being waged against you. And that's why we're out here today, to say, hell no.
Hell no.
No more. This is a world in which criminal cops, corrupt cops, looting cops, are given the order to shoot to kill against people who are just going out trying to find and make a way for their families. This is a world in which police feel free to brutalize not just young people, not just women and children, but old people as well.
because they believe that we don't have a voice and that we will not speak out. But you are here to tell the world, yes, the hell we will. We're sick and tired and we ain't going to take it no more. So I want to just take just this brief moment just to thank you for coming out and for declaring to these families who lost family members that we are here to support them. We're here to speak on their behalf. We're here to ensure that nobody else gets beat down by the police department.
Yeah, but I don't know what if that's do you want? True. Will people stop getting beat down by the police department?
Well, you know, I mean, I got to say one thing about that is, you know, of course it sucks and it's terrible, but can you imagine being a cop in L.A.? And how scared? I mean, they're people. They are people. And I know they're doing wrong things, but could you imagine holding a gun and, like, having people try to kill you all the time? Wouldn't that put you into a state of war and feeling like you want to kill other people?
Well, cops have a really high suicide rate.
Yeah.
Really, really high.
Especially, I bet, in L.A. more than other places. I mean, like, New York and L.A. and Detroit.
And they and if you've ever been stopped by a cop in the last 10 years, you know how polite they are while they're rifling you around.
It's true.
I once was stopped just because my carburetor was fucking up, and so it was revving.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw me pull by a place where a lot of drugs were being sold, and they thought I was a speed freak. Me. So they stopped me, and I had been trained back in Illinois to pull out your driver's license and stuff and be ready to give it to the policeman.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, but when they stopped me, I just opened the car door, I held up my driver's license, and just stood there very passively. And they considered me getting out of the car to be an aggressive
hostile
act.
Right, yeah. Right.
So they handcuffed me for 20 minutes and went through my car. But they were incredibly polite, though, while they were doing it. I mean, they wanted to look in my pockets, and they're going, no, I'm not going to find any needles down in here, am I?
And they put on gloves before they did it?
They didn't. They went ahead and stuck their hands in my pocket.
Hmm.
And then they went through my bag and things and found a little film canister that had less than a half a gram of marijuana
in it.
And it was shit weed. It was just Mexican weed.
Should be good stuff.
And they pulled out. They pulled out a hitter pipe, called it a speed pipe.
Oh,
reeked a pot.
They don't know what the heck's going on.
And they wrote me up a ticket for marijuana possession, and said all kinds of things about me. And then they finally released me, and let me get back in the car. The pipe was sitting on the seat. They didn't take it.
Confiscate it.
They didn't confiscate it. And I looked in my bag, and there was another film canister sitting right next to the one they took. And it had about a gram of really high quality marijuana.
Oh, there we go.
And they didn't even look at it.
Hmm. Got to keep. Maybe they saw it and they wanted you to keep that.
I don't know.
That's how nice the cops are getting.
I think they were.
They're like, it's hard to score good shit nowadays.
Yeah, they were really trying to help you out, man.
Well, once in New York, just it's ridiculous, but once in New York City, it was a really bad time. I needed marijuana. It was 1979. We really needed a joint.
You're addicted,
so
dude.
I walked over to Christopher Street to see if anybody had joints, okay? And some guy says, yeah, I got joints. And he holds up three joints, and I take them from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I reach in my pocket to pull out $3 bills to give it to him. And as I start to hand him the money, a man walks up, takes him by the wrist and says, gotcha, and walked away, and it was a cop.
Right.
And he arrested him and took him away, leaving me standing there holding up the money and the joints, and they didn't say a thing to me.
You have the cop pot karma.
Da-da.
That's what that's called. Cop pot karma.
And that's something to not be frustrated about.
Exactly. That's very good. Because that's not my story of cop pot karma.
The radio?
Where I got dragged out of a forest.
Hi, Nick.
Huh?
I was in the middle of a forest. And this is my police brutality story. They handcuffed my hands behind my back while I got dragged out of this forest. And I got so cut up. Because, you know, when you're going through a forest, you're trying to, like,
step over stuff.
Yeah, and, like, you put your hands out to move branches out of the way and stuff. Couldn't do it. And I told the cop, I was like, I've got thorns going in my legs, you know, can you please stop this? And I had one hit a pot, that was it. And he's like, no, you just keep on going. So I go through this forest, and I came out the other side, and my legs are totally messed up. And I had thorns sticking in me. And I had the cop remove them for me. I told him that he had to remove them.
Nick is on the line here.
Yeehaw.
Hey, Nick, are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We now got you part of the conversation. Nick is going to be very soft, critical mass listeners. But he had a question.
Yeah.
And your question is... Hello?
Hello? I can you're very faint.
Well, you are too.
Huh?
Okay, the question is, the question that you were asking is about, have you ever asked a cop why things are the way they are?
Well, that too. But that's a great question. I was actually saying, have you ever tried to ask a cop a question about like a crime scene in LA? And why? I'm just like raising the point that every time I've ever tried to ask a cop like what's going on, they were not polite.
That's when they stopped being polite.
I think probably for some people, some people don't experience them as being polite in general. But I mean, if you try to ask a cop like what's going on, you know, like if the street's blocked off and they say don't come, keep moving, they're not polite and they don't tell you anything and they're not very friendly. I've found in my experience. Like I would wonder if other people have that experience.
Nick, can you hear us? Oh, Nick, can you hear us?
Oh, yeah, barely.
Oh, barely? Okay. I think that sometimes that's true. I've asked cops before what's going on at scenes and they have been polite, but they can't tell me anything. So they're not trying to be rude, they just can't tell me anything. Which goes back to what I'm saying. I mean, they're kind of bred into this military mentality of doing what they're told, and so, you know, they feel like they don't have much leeway to be able to do much more than that.
Well, I agree with you, Nick, that there have been, yes, the times that I've seen cops being rude have been when you ask them questions. Because at that point, their authority is taken away from them.
That's his question.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're trying to question...
I can't hear you guys very well.
And you're blasting on us. The problem is that when I talk on the phone, we get feedback here.
Oh. Well, anyways, I would think that if any, you know, that like I just think that there is a problem with cops in LA.
I agree with that.
Okay.
Sorry about the feedback.
That's okay, but you're doing, thank you for playing the sound, and I'm looking forward to people who do that, because I need something to do to listen to right now.
Well, see, that's the answer to our question about what do you do about frustration. The answer is, you make fun of it. And so that's why we're about to switch over to the people. Thank you for calling, Nick. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for sending the MP3.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Yes, folks, that's the answer.
That is the answer.
I think that's the greatest answer.
Yeah.
Because that's such a positive use of energy. That's such a terrific thing to do.
Totally.
Yep.
LA comedy legends and Kill Radio participants, the people who do that.
And their show is, what, Tuesday?
Tuesdays.
Night?
From 7 to 8 p.m.
7 to 8 p.m. And they are amazing. Killradio.org, Tuesdays. 7 to 8 p.m.
The people who do that.
Okay.
It's Derek Iverson, Kimberly Mooney, Miles Heineman, Mary Resnick, and Steve Shannon.
And they're going to be on KPFK, I think, on Monday.
Monday.
Yeah.
On Monday.
They're going to have an interview.
But what time Monday? Do we know?
Know?
We don't know.
I don't know.
But anyway, what
that
we have...
Alan, if anyone knows.
They have prepared this special piece for us, and it's called Dick Cheney, An Exercise in Frustration. And it's a biography.
Nah.
Of our vice president. So so settle back, light up a joint.
And don't get arrested.
Pull out some brandy or some cognac or something like that. Settle
have
yourself.
Have your golden retriever walk up next to you, light the fire.
And get ready, because here we go. Time for the people who do that. okay?
Hey, we're going to sign off from here, too, so see y'all later, folks.
And I'll say goodbye when we're done later. Thanks for thanks to Greg and Katrina
that
for being
fun.
Here
thank
tonight.
You,
that was fun.
Okay.
Thank you.
Time.
Okay. Here's
we
the people.
Love Kill Radio.
We all love Kill Radio.